openness to experience. It's one of the five personality traits of the five factor model. What is openness to experience? What does it look like? We are going to be talking all about that today on Real Talk. Let's get into it. Welcome back to another episode of Real Talk with Kane Adams. We are at the nearing the end of our personality series. We are at our final trait, which is openness to experience. So we've already looked through agreeableness, conscientiousness, extroversion, neuroticism, and here we are at the final one, number five, openness to experience. Last week, we talked about neuroticism, which is a sensitivity to negative emotion. So if you are high in neuroticism, you are going to be more sensitive to experiencing negative emotion, emotions such as anxiety or depression or pain, grief, frustration, and that was broken down into withdrawal and volatility. So we talked all about that last week. So if you missed that episode, you can check it out. And today we're going to be talking about openness to experience, which is related to IQ, intellect, and to creativity as well. And so just like the other traits, we're going to be answering the three questions. Number one, what is openness to experience? Number two, what are the advantages and disadvantages of high openness? And then what are the disadvantages and advantages of low openness? Okay, just a reminder as well, a lot of this material has been collated together from the teachings of Dr. Jordan Peterson. So if you want to dive in more about into openness to experience in more detail, then I've included some links into the description below so you can take a look at those links and watch some of those videos as well. Okay. All right. Well, let's get into it. Openness to experience. The fifth personality trait on the five-factor model. So what is openness to experience? Openness to experience is a personality trait that reflects how much a person is receptive to new ideas, to creativity, to intellect, to different ways of thinking, different options, different possibilities. They could be people who are described perhaps as progressive, not necessarily from a political landscape, but we will get into that a little bit later on. It's a trait that measures, I suppose, a willingness to explore and embrace the unfamiliar. So not being afraid to try new things, to explore the unfamiliar territory. And I guess some key facets of that could include things like intellectual curiosity, artistic interests, appreciation for aesthetics, and then, of course, creativity. So just like the others, openness to experience is broken down into two subtraits, which are intellect and openness. I know that it can get a little confusing because, you know, the main trait is called openness to experience, and then one of the sub-traits is called openness. And I think a reason for that was it was just very difficult to find a word that would encapsulate openness without using the word openness. So I think they just settled with openness. So yeah, intellect and openness. What's the difference between those two sub-traits? Intellect is associated with abstract ideas and problem solving, whereas openness tends to be more associated with creativity and aesthetic experience. Okay, some common behaviors among people who are high in intellect. They like to solve complex problems. They're quick to understand things. They're able to formulate and understand abstract ideas. They can handle a lot of information. They enjoy philosophical and scientific discussion. They are analytically minded, and they have academic smarts over street smarts. And then some common behaviors among people who are high in openness. They are creative. They enjoy the beauty of nature. They're mesmerized by aesthetic experience. They daydream often. They love to reflect on things. They value art form and artistic expression. They value trying new things, keeping options open, and they struggle with routine. That last one's an interesting one, struggle with routine, because routine tends to be associated with quite a few traits. So, for example, high orderliness with conscientiousness. People who are high in orderliness tend to thrive on routine as well. And then, of course, neuroticism, which we talked about last week, people who are high in neuroticism would probably rely on a steady routine in order to keep their negative emotions at bay. And so because multiple traits deal with routine, that means that there's potential for there to be some I suppose, conflicts between the traits. For example, if you have someone who's high in openness to experience, so they love to try new things and they find it hard to stick to a routine, but you've also got someone who's high in neuroticism, then there's going to be a bit of tension there because the neurotic person is going to need routine to keep their emotions stable, but they also desire to try new things and try new opportunities, and they don't like doing the same thing over and over and over. So, you know, it's like which one wins out, right? And I suppose it's whatever one you are higher in terms of percentile, I guess, might win out, but or there'd just be a balance. But enough to say there's a bit of loggerheads going on there. And then, of course, you could have someone maybe who's high in openness to experience. They like to try new things. And you have someone who's high in orderliness. So they like things to be ordered and things to be black and white and to put into certain boxes, which could be difficult as well. I suppose that's where you could have some creatives who tend to be perfectionists. So you'd have a creative that might be a musician or an artist, or let's take an artist, for example. It's like the painting is never finished, right? And they're always having to try, make it more and more perfect, get to that point of perfection, but of course you're never going to make it there. And so that could be someone who's high in orderliness as well. And then you could have the opposite, where someone, and I'm sure we know people like this, who are very high in openness to experience, so they're creative people, but they're also very low in conscientiousness. So they're not going to be passionate about order. And these are the kind of people who just fly by the seat of their pants. You know, they are led by the wind, and they allow their creative endeavor to take the steering wheel of their life, I suppose, and they have no order whatsoever. And I remember one time, actually, when I was young, I was a teenager, actually, and we were on a family holiday, and we went to an artist's house to pick up some art, to buy some art. And she was an amazing artist. Some of her work was just incredible. Just, you could see that she has a really unique gift of artistic flair. But her house was just an absolute tip. It was an absolute mess. And there was no order whatsoever in her personal or daily life. And so that could be an example of someone who's very high in openness. So they're creative, but they're low in conscientiousness. So their life is more towards the chaos side when we talk about chaos versus order, right? Okay. And I'll make a note as well that it's not always the case that if someone is high in intellect, that they'll automatically be high in openness or vice versa. I know people who are very high in intellect and are smart people, but they don't have a creative bone in their body. And then, of course, there are people who are very creative, but tend to lack on the intellect side of things or they're not academically minded. So, yeah, but in saying that, if someone is high in intellect, they tend to be high in openness as well. Okay, let's look at some advantages and disadvantages of high openness. So advantages. So people who are high in openness, they tend to have more active imaginations and creative minds. They are more often willing to think outside the box, which can lead to innovative ideas, problem-solving approaches, and new ways of thinking. So basically, people who are high in openness are very creative people. And I suppose this could be a good place to make the point that not everybody is creative, despite what popular belief or popular culture will tell you. And I know I've seen it, you know, whether it's on social media or through influencers or affirmations or whatever, that people tend to say that everybody is creative in their own way. But it's just not true. Just as not everybody is intellectually minded or not everybody is extroverted, creativity is something that's biologically rooted and it's fostered over time. So you might have, well, let's put it this way. When you're born, you're placed on a scale. You could say the creativity scale, right? On one end, you have not creative at all. On the other end, you have unbelievably ridiculously creative, okay? And when you're born, you're going to be placed somewhere on that scale. And you can, depending on how you fostered that creativity, you can probably expand that range, but only by so much until it goes against your temperament. So if you're born on the scale of, if you're born in the middle, you know, then you could work hard and be slightly more creative than you would be from an actual perspective. But if you're not creative at all and you're born on the low end of the scale towards non-creativity, you can practice creativity and you can foster it as much as you can, but you're never going to be a creative genius. And that's just the way that personality temperament works. I mean, we talked about this in the first episode, that personality is rigid. So you can expand that range, but only by a little bit. And so not everybody is creative. And I suppose if everyone was creative, then the term loses all of its meaning, because to describe somebody as a creative person would allude to the idea that there are people who are not creative, just as to describe someone as an intelligent person would allude to the idea that not everybody is intelligent. And so if everyone was creative, then why would you use the word? It's like the word just loses all meaning, because creativity, it's a distinctive marker of someone's personality. It's a point of difference. So that's why I would use the word about describing someone who's creative or describing someone who's intelligent. Anyway, so something to know about creativity as well, and Jordan Peterson talks about this quite a bit, is that creativity is reflected really strongly in what's known as the Pareto distribution. So the Pareto distribution is where a majority output of any given circumstance is dictated by a minority of input. So it's also known as the 80-20 rule. That's probably what we know it most as, the 80-20 rule, where what is that? 20% of people produce 80% of the work, or 20% of the population own 80% of the world's wealth. And you see this as well in businesses and corporations. You know, they say something like, I think you have 10 employers of a company, three of them do half the work, you know, or out of 100 employers, 10 of them do half the work. From 1,000 employers, 30 of them do half the work. And then with 10,000 employers, 100 of them do half the work. And so it's like the more input you have, the smaller the distribution gets. But anyway, and that reflects really strongly in creativity as well. A good example of this would be in the music industry. So you take Spotify, for example. I think there's something like, there's about 80 million songs on Spotify. And out of those 80 million songs, 65 million of the songs have less than 5,000 streams. And so what that means is that, or basically 80% of the music that's on Spotify barely gets any listens at all. The people aren't listening to it. And you wouldn't know that, because when you go on Spotify, you're presented with all this music, you know, that has thousands and thousands of streams. And so it would be natural to assume that the majority of music that's on Spotify gets regular listens. But of course, you're only being, you know, when you go into the Spotify app, you're only being presented with like 3% of the music that's actually on the app. You don't see the rest. And so if you're a musical artist and you release a song on Spotify and it gets more than 5,000 streams, then you're actually in the top 20% of artists that are on Spotify, which is an incredible thought. And so that's the Pareto distribution. And then you can have, like, when you go further and further along the line, you have something like 150 to 200 songs or something like that on Spotify that have a minimum of about 350 million streams. So it's a very small number. And then you start to go up more and more. It's like, how many songs on Spotify have a billion streams? You know, I don't know the answer, but it would be a very, very select few. And so I suppose in saying that, it's like, if you're a creative person and you're wanting to pursue creativity full time from a career perspective, it's very difficult to monetize creativity, and it's very difficult to make it, as they say, because the distribution is so low, and it's not worth the risk of jeopardizing your entire life in order to make it into the top 1%. It's very difficult to achieve that. And so I suppose if you're a creative person and you want to pursue creativity and attempt to monetize it, I suppose, the best thing to do would probably be to have a stable income, like a stable job, and then to pursue creativity on the side and then just see where that goes from there and take it step by step. Because I know people, and I've seen lots of people who whether they quit their jobs or, you know, go to part-time work and seriously try to make it, you know, creatively. Most of them don't make it. Most of them fail. And it's not like, I'm not being a pessimist, you know, it's just the facts. It's just the Pareto distribution. So anyway, and I suppose on that note, the worst thing that a creative person can do is to not be creative, because creativity is an outlet. It's a form of expression. And it's the same as, you know, you take someone who's a very conscientious person, the worst thing they can do is to not be productive. And it goes right against their temperament and what they value. Remember, personality is a framework of reference, right? It's how you see the world. And so if you're a very creative person, you're going to see the world through the lens of creativity. And so if you're not engaging in that, then you're going to feel like you're not engaging in the world. that's going to be very difficult to deal with. And so people who are high in openness, they need a creative outlet to keep the quality of life at a desirable standard. Yeah, without creativity, you're just going to become depressed. So anyway, okay, I haven't really discussed any advantages yet, but I suppose one advantage of openness is that you're passionate about the aesthetic experience. So you might take someone who, well, you might take like a sunset at night, you know, you might have two people, one person's high in openness, one person isn't. The person who's low in openness might look at the sunset and think, wow, that's beautiful. And then the person who's high in openness to experience, it's like that sunset infiltrates through their eyes and reaches down to the depths of their soul. It's like they feel that sunset, you know. It's that appreciation of aesthetic experience, which is going to add to your quality of life, right? I mean, it's nice, you know, if you're high in openness to experience, it would be a nice feeling to be able to feel the beauty that is surrounding you. It would bring you a sense of joy. So that's a pretty good advantage. Okay, what about intellect? So people who are high in intellect, they have a thirst for knowledge. They're eager to learn. They like to ask questions. They seek out new information, which is a huge advantage because as a world, as a society, we're always needing new information. We're always needing people to be researching, to be pushing the boundaries of innovation in order to create new things, right? I mean, everything that I'm using right now to create this podcast episode, the camera and the microphone and everything that you are using to watch or listen to this podcast episode has been invented by people who are highly intellectual and people who are not afraid to push the boundaries of innovation. I mean, you take someone like Steve Jobs, for example, you know, with the iPhone. I mean, without intellect, the iPhone would never have been invented because you need people who can push those boundaries and try new things. People who are high in openness to experience, they're open-minded, so they like to keep their options open. They don't become stuck in an endeavor they're always trying to find new options, and they're constantly curious, which means that for any opportunities that come along, they're likely to catch them, especially if they're high in extroversion. Because if you've got someone who's high in openness and who's high in extroversion, it means they're going to be looking for the opportunities, they'll see the range of opportunities, and they'll take them as well. So that's an advantage. Okay, let's go through some disadvantages. Disadvantages of people who are high in intellect. I think a big one is that they can be chronic overthinkers. So people who are high in openness, they analyze the hell out of everything. They can struggle to turn off their minds, which can lead to stress and anxiety, especially if they're high in neuroticism as well. So, I mean, you take someone who's going to be sensitive to negative emotion and they are intellectually minded or academically minded, they're just going to ruminate like mad because they're feeling everything they're feeling and everything they're thinking is colliding together into this spiral of overthinking. I remember someone once saying to me, the problem with getting an answer is that often the answer brings with it five different questions or five more questions. And then with those, you find the answer to those five questions and they bring five more questions. And it's like you can never get to the end. And so people who are high in openness to experience are passionate about finding the answers to life's questions. But of course, with every answer you get, five questions are attached to it. And so for people who don't know how to manage that, it just becomes this never-ending spiral of exploration, which is not a bad thing, but it can be a bad thing, particularly if you're high in neuroticism, where you're just overthinking like crazy and you can't get an answer, and it comes to a point where you just get frustrated and stressed, and it will affect your quality of life. Overanalyzing can seriously inhibit your everyday life, and there comes a point where it comes a point where you need to stop thinking about it. And to say stop thinking about it is one of those quotes, you know, where it's like someone who's low in openness to experience would just say, oh, just stop thinking about it. But people who are high in openness to experience, it's like you can't just turn off your brain and stop thinking about it. It's not as easy as you think, right? But if you are high in neuroticism particularly and high in openness to experience, where you're finding yourself overthinking a lot all the time, it's important to try to stop thinking about it sometimes. And the reason being also, not only will it help you calm down and bring a sense of better quality of life, but it's also because often when you stop thinking about the question that you're needing an answer to, that question will go away, sort itself out, and then present itself back to you in a way that you can understand and receive even better. So it's like you stop thinking about it, you get the answer anyway, you know, which is a great thing. It's ironic. It's like a paradox. I think about it like with stars in the sky, you know, when you stare at a star, often it can be quite difficult to see when you're looking straight at it. But when you look slightly to the side of the star in your peripheral vision, it's like that star grows brighter. It's like you can see it better when you're not looking at it. And it could be a similar thing with this. It's like you have a question, you want to find the answer, you're frustrated because you're just not getting to the answer and you're not able to solve the problem that you wanted to solve. Sometimes the best thing to do is to stop thinking about it. Let the problem go away out into your peripheral vision. And then when you're not thinking about it and when you're not trying, it's like the answer pops to you. And so, yeah, sometimes you need to live life a little bit like that, more like that. Okay, people high in openness to experience, they can be very indecisive. We talked about indecisiveness with, gosh, what was it? Was it, I think it was, must have been conscientiousness. Yeah, in terms of low conscientiousness, people tend to be, no, it was agreeableness, wasn't it? People who are high in agreeableness tend to be indecisive. So we've talked about it a little bit before. It's the same thing with openness to experience. So the reason why people who are high in openness to experience can be indecisive is because they're constantly looking for other options. They have a knack to be able to see all the other options that are available to them. And so there's a mass potential of opportunities and possibilities, right? And Jordan Peterson, he gives a good example of this. So he says, you know, you imagine you're at the supermarket and you need to buy some shampoo. If you're presented with an option of three shampoo bottles, it's not very difficult to make that decision. You know, you can weigh up the three options and you can make a choice. But if you're presented with 100 shampoo bottles, it's going to be a lot harder to make that choice. I mean, how the hell do you know which one's going to be the best one for you? And to weigh up every single one is going to be very time consuming and you don't have the time to do that. And so it can be more difficult to make a decision when you're presented with more opportunities. That's one of the, it could be tempting to think, wouldn't it be always a good thing to be presented with as many options and possibilities as possible? But it's not always a good thing. It's almost like the law of diminishing marginal returns, I suppose. It's like, you know, you're presented with one opportunity, it's not enough. Three opportunities, pretty good. Five opportunities is great. Seven, yeah, that's okay. 10, getting too many. 20, far too many. Which is kind of like the law of diminishing marginal returns. So it's going to be harder to make the decision when you have more opportunities. And like I said, and so people who are high in openness to experience, their natural temperament is to find as many opportunities as possible, which is why it could be harder for them to make a decision. Okay, and then lastly, being high in openness as well can affect social life. So people who are high in openness to experience and low in extroversion, so they're introverted, are far more likely to struggle with social interaction than most people. And a reason, I suppose, for this, particularly on the openness front, is because it's going to be difficult to find people who share the same interests that you find. You know, it's like, it's easier to find, if you're passionate about football, it's going to be easier to find someone who's passionate about football. You can find people quite easily, you know. But if you're passionate about the history of astrophysics, it's going to be very difficult to find somebody else to befriend that is going to share that same interest. The pool is much smaller, let's put it that way. And so people who are very high in openness to experience and they're low in introversion as well, so they're not socially motivated, means that it's going to be difficult for them to find friends or to operate socially. Okay, so let's look at some advantages and disadvantages of people who are low in openness to experience. So some common behaviors among people who are low in intellect, they are practically minded or concrete minded. They can be seen as down to earth. They're not interested in abstract or complex thinking. They are masters of common sense. They are not overthinkers. They can be seen as narrow minded. And they have street smarts over academic smarts. And there's some common behaviors among people who are low in openness. They struggle with creativity. They're not interested in experience from an aesthetic perspective. They rarely daydream. They are focus-minded. They don't enjoy reflecting on things. They are black and white thinkers. They stick to what they know and they enjoy routine. Cool. So let's talk about, just quickly, let's talk about some differences between high openness and low openness. So a difference between high openness and low openness is that people who are high in openness tend to be interested in a, and I this would be a Jordan Peterson-ism, I suppose, is they are interested in low-resolution, abstract meta-goals. So the big picture. So people who are high in openness to experience, they see the big picture. They're always looking at the big picture. Whereas people who are low in openness to experience tend to be interested in high-resolution, concrete sub-goals. So the goals that make up the meta goal, right? So so they're interested in the details. They're interested in the little things and in what can be concretely implemented right here and right now, the things that happen right now. So neither is wrong, you know, perceptional way of viewing is wrong. Both have their appropriate settings. Sometimes you need to focus on the details and then sometimes you need to focus on the bigger picture. And I suppose another way to look at that is that people who are high in openness tend to be idealists, whereas people who are low in openness tend to be realists. And it's not hard to see how important it is to integrate both into society, right? Because if the world was made up only of idealists, then you'd have all these grand, amazing ideas, but no one would know how to pull them off, or they'd never get done. And of course, if you have a world only full of realists, then you would have a lot of knowledge and a lot of know-how and know how to implement action and do things, but you wouldn't have any original ideas. And so we need idealists to come up with the original ideas and then the realists to be able to bring perspective to it and to make them happen. Too much common sense and not enough ideas, you'll never do anything spectacular. But too many ideas and not enough common sense, you'll never get anything done. We need both. And it's interesting because this can move into the political sphere as well. So there have been lots of tests and studies that have been done where people have researched the link between personality and temperament and political affiliation. So how does someone's biological personality affect how they vote or affect how they view the world from a political standpoint? And out of the five-factor model, the five traits, openness to experience absolutely walloped the others and came out on top as the strongest predictor for political affiliation. And it's obviously not the only predictor. You know, there are many many things that contribute to somebody's belief in, politically. But yeah, openness to experience from a personality perspective was a massive predictor. And I think a reason for that is because people who are high in openness to experience, they tend to be more liberal with their political affiliation, whereas people who are low in openness to experience tend to be more conservative. So, and we see this, like, you know, people who, we tend to describe people who are liberal as progressive, and progressive is the idea about trying new things, which absolutely encapsulates the whole idea of being high in openness, right? It's just trying new things. Whereas conservatives are exactly that, they're conservative. They like to stay where things are at. We'll keep things where they are at, stick with what we know, stick with tradition, embrace tradition and value. And that's the idea of someone who's low in openness to experience as well. Someone who likes to stick with routine, stick with what works, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality. And then, of course, the question would be, well, which one's the correct one, right? And the answer is that both of them are correct. It's not about which political stance is the correct one. It's about which political stance would be the appropriate route to take given the circumstance or the problem that occurs. And then, of course, it depends on the nature of the problem. So there will be instances in life, whether it's on a larger societal perspective or a smaller family personal perspective, where you need to try new things and the liberal approach will be the best approach to take. And then there are situations in life where the conservative approach is the best approach to take, where you need to stick with what you always have been doing and stick with what you know. So both approaches are needed, I suppose, in that regard. Okay, what about some advantages of low openness? So people who are low in openness, they tend to be more grounded and practical in their thinking. They may focus on concrete facts and realities rather than getting lost in abstract ideas. So they're more focus-minded, which means that they're going to be more decisive because they're not plagued by myriads of opportunities. They don't have the what about this, what about that mentality. They see a route and they take it. They see an opportunity and they run with it, which I think is why people who are low in openness and high in extroversion are going to be very good at business because they're high in extroversion, so they're wired to exploit the present opportunity, and they're low in openness, so they're not presented with 100 opportunities, 100 shampoo bottles at them, right? They see 3 opportunities and they pick one and they run with it. And sometimes you need to do that in life. Sometimes you need to just make a decision and go for it, you know? And people who are low in openness to experience are far more likely to do that. People who are low in openness are less prone to overthinking or overanalyzing, especially if they're low in neuroticism. So that's a great thing. They're not trapped in their own complex world, going around and around exploring as many possibilities as they can, driving them nuts. They live a perhaps a more simplified life. And I suppose it's a shame because, you know, to say that someone is simple-minded tends to have negative connotations to it, but it's not a negative thing at all. It just means that someone who's simple-minded, they appreciate the joys of everyday life, or they just view life a bit more literally rather than in an abstract manner like someone who is high in openness, which is not a bad thing because sometimes we need to look at life more literally. Sometimes we need to see what's in front of us directly and accept it for what it is. Because if we keep trying to look at the myriads of possibilities or the abstract nature, the complex nature of something that's right in front of us, then we end up overanalyzing it and denying the reality of what it actually is. So anyway, if you're low in openness to experience, you tend to live more of a carefree life as well, even if you're high in neuroticism as well. If you're high in both neuroticism and openness to experience, it means you're going to be feeling a lot of negative emotion and you're going to be analyzing it like crazy. But if you're high in openness to experience, high in neuroticism, so you're sensitive to negative emotion, and you are low in openness, it means that even though you're experiencing negative emotion, you're not going to analyze it. You're not going to think about it. You're more likely to let it go, which definitely has positive and negative implications to it, because there'll be some little anxieties or fears or things that you are feeling that it would be appropriate and the right thing to do to just let it go, which people who are low in openness are able to do that because they don't have the brain power to want to have to deal with thinking about it, right? So that's a good thing. But of course, the negative implication would be that there are some inward struggles or negative emotions that should be addressed and should be thought over and described or diagnosed in an articulable manner, which someone who's low in openness is not going to be wanting to do that because they don't want to have to dive into the complexities of it. And so what that turns into is bottling up the negative emotion and just hoping that it goes away, which of course it doesn't, which ends up in a big explosion later on in life. And so there's a bit of a catch-22, that one. And then lastly, people who are low in openness tend to have a preference for conventional and practical thinking, which might limit their ability to think creatively or generate innovative ideas. So they struggle in terms of creativity. It's not a bad thing. It's not necessarily a disadvantage. What that means is that I suppose it's good to recognize this. If you are low in openness to experience, so you're not necessarily creative, then it's best not to pursue a job that requires creativity because you're just going to struggle. And then likewise, if you are highly creative, then you don't necessarily want to pursue a job that operates mostly on conventional or practical thinking because you'll struggle in that as well. So you want to tailor your job to your temperament in that regard. Okay, so that's openness to experience, the final trait of the 5-factor model. I hope that you got a lot out of that. I know that was a lot of information to digest, but hopefully that's given you a bit more of an insight as to what openness to experience is all about and what it looks like and how you can relate to that from your own personality as well. Next week, it'll be the final episode next week of this series. And we're going to be looking at personality in context. So taking the 5 personalities that we've just talked about and discussing how they operate in context to facets of life. So things like marriage or friendship or career, etc., etc. And so like basically, yeah, how do we bring everything that we've learned about and bring it into context into everyday life? So we're going to talk about that next week. We will see you then. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. See you next time on Real Talk.